Hello and welcome to The Exit, presented by Flippa. This is a 30-minute podcast featuring amazing entrepreneurs who have been there and they have done it. The Exit talks to incredible operators who have bought and sold businesses of all different types. You'll learn how they did it, why they did it, and get exposure to the world of exits. It's a world occupied by a very small few, but it is accessible to many. And on this episode, I sit down with James Camp. He's a serial entrepreneur and an incredible guy that talks a lot about flipping websites. And we actually came across a thread that he did on Twitter a couple of months back that went super viral. And it was all about him scaling up to 1.1 million in website flipping using a strategy. And it was a fantastic overview. So the idea behind his strategies are pretty in-depth. He goes deep into this in the interview. But before you jump into this interview, be sure to check out the previous interview that we did with Josh Dvizyak from The Zebra, fantastic entrepreneur as well. But without further ado, sit down and enjoy and listen to the interview here with James Camp. All right, guys, I am here with James Camp, the successful serial entrepreneur and investor. How's it going, James?
Good. Thanks for having me, Steve.
For sure. For sure. So this all started, we were just talking before we started recording about a tweet thread that James put together that was talking about buying websites and making 1.1 plus million over the course of 12 months. And this definitely got my attention. I saw it, came across my feed, and I was like, okay, I have to reach out to James. We have to talk about this. So that's kind of the foundation here in terms of like how I found James and how we wanted to really bounce this conversation off. But before we get into, you know, the intricacies that you go through in that tweet, let's talk about your background. Like what's your origin story and what really got you into buying online businesses?
Sure. Yeah. I think as a sort of non-traditional background. And the more people I speak to, and actually the more entrepreneurs I meet, it just becomes, I think I've got this sort of contrarian way of looking at the world, but I think it's actually just how people like me look at the world. I was like an internet marketing kid when I was like 16, 15 years old. I mean, ever since I can remember, I was trying to make money. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget when I was 15 or 16, I was really into sneakers and I had decided I was going to start smelting down scrap gold to sell on Craigslist. I don't remember. It was something along those lines exactly. But I started a blog. And it was called Gold Piece XL. And it was just like with pictures of dunks and like scrap jewelry I had bought that I was convinced that in my bedroom at home, I was going to smelt down and like flip and make money. Cool. And so I just would like write really random content about stuff I found interesting. And this is a different day of the internet when there was less stuff online. So people would take, you know, there's a big idea of taking books that existed that weren't online yet and sort of rewriting them and putting them online, and that could be fresh content. And I wrote a couple articles that went pretty viral. And the way they went viral is I was just like, I didn't realize I was spamming, but I would join these blogging communities and I would just DM people my content, hundreds of them a day, like read my article. And I had a couple that went viral on two platforms that don't really exist anymore. One was called Dig and one was called StumbleUpon. Yeah. And I had Google AdSense on the website and I remember opening Google AdSense and I had like $36. And I mean, people always say like, you remember the first dollar you made online? That was for sure the like epiphany moment of, wow, I really, really, there's something to this. Mm-hmm. I sort of went to a deep dive of understanding advertising, got involved in affiliate marketing and then involved in sort of brokering offers between advertisers and publishers, built an ad network called Liquid Offers, and I sold it. Sort of the first big flip that I had as well was I bought a domain name called Upload Forever from a domainer. It had been a file hosting website and the guy just had it sitting there on a parking website and was just collecting like money from clicks when people search for files. And bought that and then sort of had that rebuilt into a file hosting website again, and then had it sort of as the incentivized version of Liquid Offers. So we had this ad network that was all for non-incent traffic, called Liquid Offers. Mm-hmm. And then I had underneath it, I had Upload Forever, which was a content locking instant offer network. So the way it worked was you wanted to access a picture of this cute baby. I uploaded it online and then I locked it with an affiliate offer. And then you would fill out that affiliate offer to access the content. The difference is that you have to use incentive offers instead and they pay a lot less. But anyway, I sold that business and then sort of just got into strategy consulting for a lot of different things. You know, I put my hand in a lot of different honeypots, was very lucky enough to work with some really big consulting firms and some big brands. And then I think, I guess like 7 years ago, I had this epiphany that I felt I wanted to become a digital nomad, as I think a lot of people feel that they want to be in their mid-20s. And I sold everything I owned and I moved to Southeast Asia with a laptop, and I lived in Kuala Lumpur. And just did strategy consulting there. Had a contract with McKinsey in the US, which was very lucky for me because I was getting paid in USD, but living off of Ringgit. I started mentoring at an accelerator called MAGIC, which the Malaysian government runs. And through that, I got plugged into Launchpad, which is one of Google's accelerators. And I actually went out to London and started teaching growth strategies at Launchpad in London. Came back home to New York to visit, ran into an old friend who had been a commodities trader. And he said, hey man, I think the next big commodity is cannabis. And I know that you've been working in these big firms. Let's do something in that space. And I said, all right, well, I'm a digital marketer. So let's see what we can do. Long story short, we ended up building a sort of strategy consulting firm that had some wholly owned media assets within it that we used as sort of the top of funnel, so to speak, into getting consulting clients. Did that for about 4 years, I guess, and then sold that back in July of 2020. And that brought me to Twitter, where I started tweeting about sort of businesses that I would buy and flip and how to do that. And I had one tweet, which is the one you're talking about, that I did. And this is stuff I just do for fun anyway. Like, I'm constantly trying to run cases on things and see what I would do with them. And that tweet got me, I think, 1,400 followers in a day and 150,000 impressions and 40,000 engagements. And I thought, oh, there's really something here. People are really interested in this. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of followed in that path and continuously put out tweets and newsletters about sort of customer acquisition and monetization under the context of website flipping. And today, as I said to you, I'm sort of trying to get a couple brands under LOI to buy and put into a hold co with an agency, and sort of maybe that'll be the next big exciting thing that I'll work on.
Got it. So the strategy firm that you and a friend had developed exited in mid 2020, like right after all the kind of craziness started. That's sure. Very, very cool that you were able to pull that off, even with the craziness going on. In terms of how that process worked, was it, you know, I've on the show here, we've heard everything from like bumped into the acquiring company at a coffee shop, you know, through sure. a manufacturer, they got the phone number, reaching out, you know, every different way. So what was that process like for you guys?
So it's interesting that you say that it's amazingly pulled off in July, because candidly, July 2nd was the close, but it took a long time prior to July for any of that to happen. Mm-hmm. The people that bought us actually were old clients of ours, right? And so it's a really complex and weird transaction that we went through. And I'll save that for if anyone wants to have a long 30-minute esoteric conversation about sort of how you close M&A valuation gaps through different structures and clawback agreements and earnouts and all that good stuff. But we went through like a really weird transaction that ended up with a bit of cash and a lot of stock. And it had, long story short, we ended up owning a piece of the company that bought us from consulting for them. Mm-hmm. And essentially it sort of became like a mix of an acqui-hire, but you know, we very luckily had built up a big set of assets within our company. And we'd sort of considered, some of these companies went public that we consulted for. So they were marketable securities, and we could have just sold the assets and sort of dividended them out. It would have been a worse tax structure for everyone, but we ended up going through an acquisition instead. And it was just a really clever, I think, not to toot my horn because I didn't put it together, but the bankers that helped us involve and that we worked with created a really clever structure that allowed us all to be happier, I think, and align incentives in sort of in terms of growth. So there's a little bit of me doing consulting for some of the companies these guys own today as part of that. And it sort of was a living, breathing example of finding the right buyer being super, super important, right? And I think that that's sort of one thing I think about with flipping as well, with flipping websites. It's a lot of the same concept as value-added PE stuff, right? It's sort of making something more exciting and interesting to a specific buyer. And I think very often people go and just sell businesses, and I think they might do better if they went off and looked for specific buyers to buy their business. Yeah. Sorry, that was like sort of roundabout way of saying it, but it was a weird transaction.
Yeah, no, it was good. You talked about earnouts, all the kind of intricacies that are into a not average transaction. And I think—
Yeah, so we didn't even, so part of it was earnout and part of it's clawback, which you hear about earnouts a lot. Clawback you don't hear about a lot. So clawback is like, you gave me something today, and if I don't hit certain KPIs for you in the future, you legally are allowed to take it back from me, mm-hmm. right? So like, that's, I think, as people look at exits, it's important to understand that there are a lot of different mechanics and ways to push and pull to meet, to close valuation gaps when looking at mergers and acquisitions.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. So a lot of people that are, you know, listening and watching this are probably curious, and we've seen this a lot time and time again. Mm-hmm. And I always kind of wonder it as well, having gone through an acquisition, the why. So the time of acquisition, everybody has different reasons, like why they go through an acquisition through the brain damage of a complex, you know, transaction with earnouts, clawbacks, all of these moving parts. So for you, you know, on a personal level, you know, what was the why around why you wanted to sell the strategic consulting business? Hey guys, Steve here, and taking a quick pause from the interview. I know that selling a business can feel unattainable and just out of reach for everybody, but it's definitely something that is very reachable for people that are listening to this podcast with Flippa. And I've mentioned that this show is presented by Flippa. They have over 3 million users on their platform who are looking to acquire everything from content sites to e-commerce stores to SaaS platforms or even mobile applications. So if you're curious and want to know more about what your business is worth, head to flippa.com/theexit for free valuations on your business. It takes a couple minutes to literally go through, and you can just go through the whole process without committing to anything at all. So once again, flippa.com/theexit, check it out, get a valuation on your business without any commitments, and just see exactly what your valuation of your business is worth. So let's dive into the interview.
Well, I think just from a very personal standpoint, I'm really good at like 3 to 5 year sprints. Like I can run really fast and hard for 3 to 5 years in terms of work. And I really get burnt out, and I felt a little burnt out by this. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the right time to the right buyer. It was just sort of incredibly serendipitous. I knew that I wanted to go do some other things. I wanted to sort of take another big swing. You know, interestingly enough, I may mix up the dates here, but I guess it's 2021 now. So, but I guess like in 2017, maybe we were actually about to trying to do a capital raise, and the lead on the raise was like, I'll just buy you. And we were like, it was a strategic, right? Sort of in our space that we thought would be interesting. And they said, I'll just buy you. And we negotiated a price. We negotiated an 8-figure price, and I went home, I left, and I told my girlfriend, I said, jaw on the floor, like, this is it. Like, this is, I started a company a year and a half ago and rich, you know? And I went into the office the next day, and there was a term sheet sitting in my inbox, and it was for a fifth, literally exactly a fifth of the price we had negotiated for. And my jaw just hit the floor. And my partner and I at the time said to the employees, yeah, we're going to go outside for a second. We went outside and we talked, and I was just like, I don't know what to do. And so my father had been an entrepreneur. And when he was younger, he had an opportunity to sell his company, never did. And when he passed away, he really had nothing at all. And so for me, he passed away from Alzheimer's. And so his business fell apart as he got older. And so I think for me, I'd seen sort of firsthand how, like, when someone offers you a golden ticket, so to speak, that, you know, you need to be really, really serious about not taking it, and really confident in not taking it if you don't want to. Long story short, we decided not to take that. And we ended up going on a couple more years. And so the next time an opportunity sort of presented itself, I think that we felt, I mean, I was 32, my partner was 27, you know, I had raised money from friends and family and investment bankers and raised debt. And it was just, the real entrepreneur grind is like an absurd roller coaster that, like, I think I'm built for, but every once in a while, like, you just got to get off for a second is sort of how I felt. And it was just serendipitous timing with the right buyer. And I felt like I was ready for a new sort of opportunity in my life.
Yeah. Well said. Well said. And I like that you described the roller coaster one, and then also just how quickly that up and down happened, where you get that term sheet and it's a fifth of the size, and it goes from, you know, the high up euphoric of telling your girlfriend, like, hey, this is a huge deal, you know, a year and a half in, and then the next day, boom, it's just like a complete shift. And that kind of captures the the grind of the roller coaster.
I've had more, I mean, you know, I've had more times, and not that I'm super tough, because I'm really not, right? But, like, sort of, it's just been, it's funny because people will say to me, like, oh, I'm so impressed that you went this path, right? This is not a path I could ever deal with. And sort of, I'm grateful that people find it sort of admirable that myself and other entrepreneurs go this path, but I won't speak for other people. I'll speak for myself. I just don't know anything else, right? Like, I just actually, I don't know how to go get a job, right? I you know, I just don't know. So, like, sort of that up and down is just sort of what I've been used to. I've never known. I mean, I paid my own paychecks for years, right? And, like, I never known when a paycheck was coming. I mean, we were paying employees, not paying ourselves at points, you know? So that sort of getting knocked down onto the floor is something I'm pretty used to at this point. And to sum it up, I felt like I was a little tired of getting knocked down the floor, and someone offered me a hand up. So why not take it?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just even taking a step back, taking a breath, you know, saying, like, I've grinded for this long, and you really did a good job of describing yourself, and you know yourself well enough that it was 3 to 5 year sprints. A lot of younger entrepreneurs that I've met over the years, you know, they really haven't quite gotten that sense yet, where they're kind of looking at theirs being the next unicorn billion-dollar company, and there's no real inward visibility there of saying, like, actually, I'm going to burn out in 3 to 5 years. And that number is different for everybody, but just knowing that is really empowering for you to say, like, I got this window of time where I can execute better than anybody, and I just need to pull it off in that window of time. And I think that is something that is a really good knowledge nugget for younger people out there that are maybe just first starting, or maybe they're hitting that kind of burnout feeling where they're getting an itch for a different project. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just knowing yourself a little bit.
I think, you know, for me, I realized it's funny because we don't have enough time to dive into it fully, but the company that we started just was not the exact same company that we sold. So, like, in terms of, like, a real pivot that we had to take, right? And so we sort of reformed NewCo and gave all the old shareholders pro rata shares in NewCo because we wanted to make it right for them.
Yeah.
And so, like, to keep going with that sort of concept, like, I thought when I was 25, I was like, oh, we are so, this is it. Like I'm as clever as Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg. And sort of, I think by my 30s, I was like, I'm really not, and I don't have a problem with that. I don't need to be, I don't want to be Jeff Bezos, right? Like I love playing in like the, I'm the guy to take you from 30 to 60, right? Like I'm not the guy who's going to run a $2 billion company. That's just not who I am. I don't have it in me. It doesn't interest me. Like I like growing things, and sort of, I felt that we had capped out the growth that we found fun and interesting, and that I thought that I would be good at, right? And so I think a lot of that, to your point, is sort of being able to be introspective. Not that I'm so good at that, but people should take a step back and say, I hate to say it, it sounds so corny, but what makes me happy? Yeah, money makes me happy. Working hard makes me happy. But like within the confines of not just what am I chasing eventually here, right? I know I like jumping from project to project, right? And so why sort of force myself into something that was not fun anymore?
Yeah. Yeah. And the episode that I did with Josh Tabiziak from The Zebra, he talked a little bit about the same situation where one day he got into the elevator going up to work, and everybody in the elevator worked at the company he started, but he didn't recognize or know any of them. And he said, this is a time where I need to leave.
Yeah.
Building a system from zero. And then once the system exists, you're operating within it. And that's a whole different, you know, mindset. And they're kind of different parts of, I guess, your brain that you're using or something like that. But it is a weird feeling. But getting back on track.
Sorry, yeah.
In terms of you know, what you're working on now, there's the tweet, you're working on, you know, acquiring a couple different companies, putting them into a holding company. What was the concept that you went through in the tweet? I wanted to touch on that, where you literally you went over a million in 12 months in the thread and described how you could do it. Could you just break it down for listeners?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I've done it with a few tweets like that actually. And I do like a newsletter where I just do the exact same thing in it too. And I'll plug that at the end. But the reality is like, it's just sort of looking at a business and saying, where is there an extra opportunity in terms of customer acquisition? And then more importantly, where is there an extra opportunity in terms of revenue of the back end, right? So I've done some of the consulting work I've done is with like large direct response info product companies. Mm-hmm. And so I know sort of what owning the back end looks like. And with our last company, what you saw on the surface was a financial news website that sort of had 40,000 email subscribers and 2 million unique readers a year and was very reputable. But that really was just a conduit to us getting these consulting clients, right? And so, you know, AdSense, how this whole conversation started is like, you know, programmatic display is the lower level of monetization, right? So very often when I look at things, I look at websites for sale, it's just, is there a better way to monetize this? And so the way that we got to that money in the 12-month timeframe is sort of really understanding the power and magic of A, leverage, and B, an exit, right? So let's say that, I mean, it's a pretty standard rule that websites today sell for 36 times monthly net revenue, right? So, and, you know, excuse me for not remembering the exact numbers from that thread, but in general, if you add $1,000 of monthly revenue, you've added $36,000 in value to the business, right? So if I buy a business for $100,000 and it's making $3,000 a month, right? And that's roughly what it would be. If I double that revenue, you know, I'm also making an extra 100 at 12 months. I've now made $36,000 in revenue over those 12 months. And now when I sell it, I'm getting an extra $100,000 on the back end because someone's buying it for that multiple. So that thread and most of what I talk about is looking at opportunities and seeing if there's a better customer acquisition strategy, A, and then B, is there a better way to monetize those customers or readers, right? Mm-hmm. So very often that's sort of, there might be opportunities for directories, there might be an opportunity for affiliate marketing. I think there's a lot of opportunities for small e-com shops on top. I think a lot of people I know talk about sort of brand owned media these days. You know, Equinox owns Furthermore, I believe, which is a magazine about working out. I forget who owns Chalkboard Mag, but it's like a food company. Mm-hmm. My point is, I think a lot of the time when people look at media sites, they think about how do I sell display ads, right? Or maybe advertorials, you know, whatever. But that's the low hanging fruit. I think if you've got a little more juice in you, or if you were like a strategic value-added private equity firm that was, you know, putting things together and crushing OpEx and CapEx, you might find it was more synergistic with a different revenue model. So to sum it up again, it's how do I go find a customers for cheaper or more? And then how do I make more money off of those customers? And very often it's changing that from just display ads to seeing where are they clicking when they go on those display ads, right? Like, you know, if you're going to a plumbing website, is the person then clicking an ad from a plumber on Google? If they are, then you should probably just be selling leads directly to plumbers. You know, you make a lot more money in that regard. And then the real sort of alpha, the real gain comes from the sale of that business, right? This is what you see in house flipping. This is what you see in, you know, most distressed PE deals where they exit businesses. It's sort of minute changes that make something much more valuable on the back end, and then a sale of that business on the back end, that you sort of capture that value today.
Yeah.
I don't know if that explains it well.
No, it definitely did. It definitely broke it down. And I think one of the things that really caught my attention was that your skill set specifically, you know, isn't the first initial response that a lot of people have when they're doing diligence on something, like thinking of it through your perspective of adding unique user acquisition to a new site, you know, adding affiliate links, adding, you know, sponsored posts, whatever it may be, all the way to a flip, is a unique perspective. I think a lot of people are, you know, really just reliant on the display ads and keeping a consistent return on investment, just parking money, making a return. Whereas your approach is adding more traffic, adding more eyeballs, adding more revenue, and rapidly flipping it, like flipping a house, like you described it.
And I think the value in that is that when you flip the house, is like the end buyer is more interested in owning that house than you are. And so I feel the same way about exiting businesses or websites, right? Is like you can find an end buyer. I'm going to create a hypothetical scenario, but you're writing about mortgage rates, right? On a blog. Okay. Well, at the lowest levels, you're getting AdSense ads. I would recommend that you go cut a deal directly with a mortgage broker or a call center that sells mortgage broker leads and sell those leads directly. Mm-hmm. Probably the most synergistic exit for you would be a mortgage broker, right? It's not even a media company or a holdings company. If you could find a mortgage broker and say, hey, you guys can capture even more of this revenue. And that's only specifically, I think of that because I owned a lead gen site that I sold for hard money leads. And I was taking some points on the loans that they were doing. Mm-hmm. But at one point I had a conversation with a lender. I was like, listen, man, if I really start sending you crazy leads, I'm just going to go buy a small brokerage and close on those loans myself, right? Underwrite those loans ourselves. Yeah. But I think that a lot of people, I think it just seems like a too big a lift. And I think a lot of website buyers these days are buy and hold people. They are people that are looking for sort of passive income streams. Mm-hmm. And it happens to be that from a cash on cash perspective, they're probably one of the highest returns for an asset class that exists today. Mm-hmm. But what I tell people always, always, always is that whether you're trying to do what I talk about, which is like aggressive remonetization and customer acquisition and then the flip, or you're looking for a sort of passive income stream, that a website is really not a passive income stream. It's sort of a living, breathing thing. People always ask me, what should I look for? One of the first things I say is a couple of years of consistent traffic, because I'm not an SEO guy, right? So like, but Google's algorithms are constantly changing. So you better be able to sort of deal with what comes your way. I don't think that websites are the beautiful passive income stream that people hope that they are. Mm-hmm. But I think that they can be, if you know a little bit, you can put in a little bit of maintenance work, they can be fantastic cash on cash returns as
Agreed.
An investment.
Agreed. So the finale question that we ask everybody here on the show is, knowing what you know now, what would you tell James 10 years ago in like a short, concise kind of knowledge nugget for all the listeners out there?
So I'll start it with the really bad answer, which is I love who I am today. And I genuinely believe I wouldn't be who I was today if everything hadn't gone wrong and gone right. But if I had to give a nugget, it would say, I would say, get comfortable doing things you don't like doing and understand the long game. It's so cliche, but I'm only 32. And for the first time in my life, I'm trying to look 10 years out. I think I got super, 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 super lucky in terms of what happened to me. And, I think so much of success is based on luck, but if you're trying to mitigate luck, I would be willing to play the long, game. Patience. I mean, in one word, patience. Have a lot of patience. Something I did not have when I was a kid.
Well said. Well, those are all the questions I have for you, James. Where can people go and learn more about what you're working on and following you?
Yeah. So I'm super active on Twitter. It's Jameson Camp or James on Camp is how it's spelled. At Jameson Camp on Twitter. I write about website flips at nanoflips.com. It's just a newsletter. Every couple of weeks I'll put out I'll run a case or a breakdown of a website that I think would be a good opportunity for a flip, how it might look and sort of, what I would do in that scenario and sort of what revenues I would expect. So yeah, Jameson Camp on Twitter or nanoflips.com. And that's me.
Awesome. Awesome. You guys can see all of those links that James just mentioned in the show notes. But once again, thank you so much for coming on the show, James. This was fantastic. And good luck with all your endeavors.
Thank you so much, Steve. Have a good one, man.